Hello, I'm Jessica Laventure. This is number 0232, the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0232. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, Andrew Vazakis, the night sky guy, is back on the show to talk about the big news of a recent supernova.
It's something amazing to be able to see. It's one of the most violent events that occur in the universe. It's extremely powerful. What's so cool about it is that it's relatively nearby. And when I say nearby, this is in astronomical terms, because here we're talking about a star that's exploding in a galaxy in our local neighborhood of galaxies. It sits about 12 million light years away.
Internet privacy expert Janine Darling on being vigilant about your online safety. The companies you deal with might not be as thorough as they should be.
Understand what kind of security they're using and understand if they are hacked and your information is compromised, what they're going to do about it. Those are things that are so, so important now, because not every company is paying attention to protecting your information. So you are, each one of us is, our first line of defense.
Dr. Robert Slay is back on the program. He's the author of The Battle Buddy Diet, but he's also a stand-up comic, and this time around, he's on to talk about some humorous stories that deal with life in the ER.
The nurse is going to say to you, she's going to put you in that little cubicle with a gurney there, and she's going to take a gown and throw that gown down there on that gurney, and she's going to say, take off all your clothes and put this gown on with the opening to the back. I'm going to come in to see you shortly, and that's when we're going to see if you pass the test or not. 50% of the patients are going to put that gown on with the opening to the front. And if you put that gown on with the opening to the front and no clothes on, we are going to take a look at what you're trying to show us, because we really can't help it. And we're also going to drop your IQ by about 20 points just from doing that.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0232, was Jessica Laventure, who is one of the co-hosts of The Morning News on Global Montreal. She's on that show along with Camille Ross and Richard Dagenet. You can catch the show Monday through Friday if you live in the Montreal area on Global Montreal. And that starts at 6 o'clock and goes right through until 9 a.m. So that's 6 to 9 a.m. Monday through Friday. Jessica is on that show. And thank you very much, Jessica, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A 34-year-old man in a southern city in Spain was attempting to allegedly occupy an apartment in a residential building when a group of neighbors confronted him. Panicked by their reaction, he pulled out a gun and fired several shots to intimidate them. But when the man attempted to put the gun back into his pocket, he mistakenly shot himself in the groin. Ooh, all the guys listening right now are crossing their legs. It was the very same people he had threatened minutes before who took him to the emergency room at the local hospital. The man had lost a considerable amount of blood since the bullet punctured his testicles. And although the squatter is still recovering from his injuries, he faces charges for illegal possession of firearms as soon as he is released from hospital. Well, I'm guessing he won't be without accommodation for much longer. And he might whistle if he ever runs while naked. I'm just saying. And while we're talking about weapons near or around the nether regions, listen to this next story. Jennifer McCarthy, age 48, emerged from her Albuquerque, New Mexico bedroom in lingerie, according to a statement made to police, and confronted a boyfriend with what was between her legs. That, he says, was a silver handgun, and it was, inside her. Then, he says, she pointed it at him and says, "Who is crazy, you or me?" The couple had previously been arguing over space aliens. So I guess the jury's out on that question. Anyway, McCarthy's boyfriend seized the gun and put it in the toilet, but when she tried to get it, he put it outside in the trash. A deputy found the pistol there. McCarthy, who told police her gun had been, quote, missing for a while, unquote, I wonder where she was looking, was booked on an aggravated assault charge and released on bond, but not before being subjected to history's most justifiable cavity search. Wow. I'm just wondering, how many times do you think the police had to retype their report just to get the wording right? Meanwhile, police said a woman arrested on a drunken driving charge allegedly drove her freshly crashed vehicle, which was missing a tire, into a Florida jail parking lot. The Gainesville Police Department said Brielle Irene Watkins, age 33, pulled her silver Ford Escort into the Alachua County Jail parking lot, and jail staff noticed the vehicle had what appeared to be fresh crash damage to its right side and was completely missing its right rear tire. Jail workers contacted police, who determined Watkins was showing signs of impairment. She was arrested after failing a field sobriety test, and police measured her blood alcohol, the content of it, at 0.222 and 0.215, which is nearly three times the legal limit in Florida. Watkins was charged with driving under the influence and was being held at the same jail she drove up to. The police report did not say how Watkins' car was damaged or whether she knew she was driving onto jail property. Well, you know, it's nice to know that a crime is coming right to the police station's door. It makes apprehension oh so much easier, doesn't it? Yeah. And you know, I like sports just as much as the next guy, and I have to admit that a loss by a favorite team can have a somewhat mild, if only temporary, effect on my current mood. But this story takes the cake. University of Alabama football fan Adrian Brisky, age 28, was charged in December with the fatal shooting of a 36-year-old woman who was also a Bama fan at a post-game gathering in Hoover, Alabama, to commiserate over the team's last-second loss to arch-rival Auburn. Now, according to the victim's sister, Brisky was angry at the woman because she was insufficiently distraught at the game's outcome. Hey, Brisky, you know it's only a game, right? Only a game? Just saying. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Arvind Kejriwal, fresh from his electoral victory as chief minister of the state of New Delhi, India, was to report to work on Monday, December 30th, to begin fulfilling his anti-corruption administration, one that promised unprecedented transparency to make government visible to constituents. However, the transparency of his first public announcement was perhaps over the top, in that he was taking the day off because of a bout of diarrhea. Said a colleague, when the chief minister gives you a minute-by-minute update of his bowel movements, hail democracy. I like that quote. And you know, at least we know that the information of this administration will be flowing. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Recently, an exploding star appeared in the night sky, dazzling astronomers who haven't seen a new supernova so close to our own solar system in more than 20 years. Science writer Andrew Vizekas, the night sky guy, is back on the program to talk about it. He joins us via Skype-to-Skype communications from right here in Montreal. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Peter.
Nice to have you back on the program again. So tell us about this supernova. Is it really, really a big deal? Is it the kind of thing that gets people like you excited?
Yeah, just like the article I actually just wrote for National Geographic about this. It's the astronomy community is going gaga, and really it is. It's whenever there is an exploding star in the universe, it always gets everyone excited in the skygazer community, because it's something amazing to be able to see. It's one of the most violent events that occur in the universe. It's extremely powerful. Supernovae explosions are. And this one, is, what's so cool about it is that it's relatively nearby. And when I say nearby, this is in astronomical terms, because here we're talking about a star that's exploding in a galaxy in our local neighborhood of galaxies. It sits about 12 million light years away, this galaxy that is basically the host of this exploding star.
Now, is this galaxy next to ours, or are there other galaxies between us and it?
Oh, there are other galaxies between us that are much closer. For instance, the famous Andromeda galaxy, which is about three times, it's like the big brother of the Milky Way. It's about three times the size of our own Milky Way galaxy, which contains, by the way, about 100 billion stars, our sun included. So you've got this island of stars, and then in our local neighborhood, in our general area, there's about 20 other galaxies, and then that basically sit within about 5-6 million light years. And then on the edge of this local neighborhood, you've got this particular galaxy called M82, or also known as the cigar galaxy, because it kind of takes the shape of that's reminiscent of a cigar. And it's also a spiral galaxy, home to billions of stars. And in this case, there's one particular star that is just basically undergone an outburst, a huge explosion that has made it visible to us here 12 million light years away.
Okay, so we've often talked about this on the program when we've had you on, about the time it takes for light to reach us. So this supernova that we're talking about, is how long ago did this happen for us to see it now?
Right. Well, this is what's so cool about it, is that the explosion itself occurred 12 million years ago. So the actual, when I'm saying the actual event, the actual explosion occurred 12 million years ago, and it's taken 12 million years for the beam of light from that explosion to reach us here on Earth and our telescopes. So it's really, that just is a testament of how large the universe is, because nothing travels faster than light, at least as we know it at this point. And light travels at 300,000 kilometers per second, and it's taken this long for it to get here. So basically, you are looking back in time when you're looking at this supernova. And at 12 million years, I mean, that's amazing, because you're looking back 12 million years in time. So the light that left on its journey from this star that is reaching us today as we're speaking, what was happening on Earth at the time? Can you imagine? I mean, back then it was, you probably had, mastodons and mammoths and saber-toothed tigers roaming around on a prehistoric North American continent.
So if somebody looks up in the sky, either with a very, very strong pair of binoculars, or, if even better, with a telescope, what exactly will they see?
Well, what you're looking at in this point, and what's really cool about this in terms of for observers, so folks that want to actually go out and see it, it's best positioned for people that are in the northern hemisphere. It's very close to the famous star pattern called the Big Dipper, which a lot of people are very familiar with. It's basically in the northeastern sky, visible in the early evenings. So soon after local sunset, and complete darkness falls, you can start making out the seven star pattern that looks like basically a bowl with a handle in the sky. That's the Big Dipper. And this particular galaxy that is host to the supernova is about 7 degrees on top of the Big Dipper. So above the bowl section of the Big Dipper, that's equal to the width of your fist at an outstretched arm's length. So if you sort of look at that, put out your arm with one end of your fist at the end of the bowl and sort of the other end of your fist above the bowl, you'll reach the area where the galaxy is. And with a strong pair of binoculars, you can actually see the galaxy as a fuzzy oval patch, like a very small ghost-like hazy patch, a small one in binoculars, through a small telescope. Right now, the star that's exploding is just about visible, even in a small telescope. You can actually see a star where there never was a star. Because you have to remember, this galaxy contains billions of stars. But we're talking about a galaxy that's at 12 million light years away. You cannot see the individual stars in the galaxy. What you see is the combined light of all those billions of stars that create this fuzzy patch that you see through your field of view.
Well, but that's what I wanted to ask, because what you're talking about, I mean, if you are in a situation where you're able to have no light pollution away from any major city, and you can see all the stars that are naturally in the sky at night when you get away from the city, does it stand out when you see so many stars, like in the countryside or away from all light?
Well, in this case, you have to remember this fuzzy patch that's the galaxy, the cigar galaxy, is only visible through high magnification. So it is just barely visible with binoculars, even from suburban skies. So even if you're in the typical burbs of a large city, you would be able to see this with binoculars in a small telescope, but not with the naked eye. Even in the darkest skies, this particular galaxy would not be visible with the naked eye, but it is easily visible with pair of binoculars, even under light pollution conditions. But what's interesting is that now we have this supernova that's this bright, what looks like a bright dot, a bright star that's superimposed in front of the galaxy, so where there wasn't any. So if you look at pictures of this galaxy online, like if folks would go onto my article, for instance, at National Geographic, they can see a before and after photo of the galaxy, one that was taken a month ago and one that was taken just yesterday. It would show you the difference, and you can clearly see there's a star where there never was a star before that's superimposed on the galaxy. So you cannot mistake it if you know what you're looking for. And this is early, by the way, because this star may continue to brighten very well, even though now it's only visible with binoculars and or small telescope, I should say. It could become bright enough to see with binoculars, and there is a slight possibility of even it becoming visible to the naked eye.
Well, that was my next question. The whole idea of a supernova, this event that's taking place, how long does this event last for?
Well, they're very brief events, and they're basically, you know, just a blink of an eye kind of event in terms of the life of a star. Remember, stars like our sun can live for anywhere measuring from hundreds of millions of years to billions of years. And these events, these explosive events, usually last for only a few weeks at most. So we're now thinking that we caught the very early part of this explosion, probably within a few days. In fact, just today we've gotten some new reports coming out of folks looking through archives of photographs taken earlier on in January. This particular one was found on January 21st, and folks noticed that there was nothing visible before January 12th. So as of January 12th, some archive photos are showing that this star began to brighten slightly, and it is continuing to brighten. And we think we might see a plateau in brightness in the next few weeks, and then it'll quickly fade away.
We have just about a minute, so let me ask you this last question, and that is, does the action of a supernova in any way cause a chain reaction or domino effect?
Well, it's pretty much, if there were any planets around, if it was a planetary system around the star, pretty much everything is fried in that planetary system. And what's interesting is that there is a lot of radiation that's given off by a supernova explosion, a lot of nasty gamma rays, for instance, X-rays as well, that would wash over the neighboring area. So it's not a very healthy place to be, a safe place to be around a supernova. Luckily, we're at a very safe distance of occurring 12 million light years away. But if something like this were to happen within our own local Milky Way galaxy in, say, a few hundred light years from us, that would potentially be catastrophic. Current theories actually hold that some of the major extinction events in the history of the Earth could possibly be correlated to supernova explosions in our local neighborhood of stars. So it is an event that definitely has effects in its surrounding region.
Fascinating stuff indeed. Andrew, always a pleasure to have you on the program. People can check out your website, which is thenightskyguy.com. And you mentioned your article in National Geographic?
That's right. Folks can read my, I have a ongoing column called Starstruck, and that's at nationalgeographic.com.
Thank you very much, Andrew.
My pleasure. Clear skies.
Andrew Vazakis, the Night Sky Guy. You can check out his website at thenightskyguy.com. And of course, you'll find the link on my website at thestufffile.com. Just go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0232, and you'll find the link.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Batteries not included, some assembly required.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk about online security. Plus, we'll have another visit from Dr. Robert Slay, who not only is a doctor, but he's also a stand-up comedian. And we have lots more Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day on a program I also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, ask people how they stand compared to their fellow countrymen, and in survey after survey, the vast majority rank themselves above average in such areas as driving skills, sexual prowess, and general honesty. Now, a recent survey of English prisoners published in the British Journal of Social Psychology revealed that those miscreants think they too are in the upper half. They rate themselves above average, whether compared to Britons in prison or in society at large, in compassion, generosity, dependability, trustworthiness, and honesty. In fact, the only trait on the University of Southampton survey in which the criminals failed to rank themselves as better than the typical Brit was law-abidingness. So, on that trait, the inmates rated themselves merely as average. Now, I guess when you look at these stats, depending on your level of optimism versus pessimism, you could conclude that prison has changed these inmates and they're all going to come out as better people, or, on the flip side, jail time has done nothing to impede their overall feeling of pious self-worth. Your call. Anyway, here's a problem with a possible solution. You ready? Problem. Your wife is days away from giving birth and you live on the top of a hill in the middle of one of the snowiest winters in years and you're afraid your car won't make it up the hill in the snow. Solution. Park at the bottom of the hill and keep a sled handy in case you need to slide your pregnant wife down the hill. That was exactly the thinking of Philadelphia resident Fabian Banani when a particularly heavy snowstorm was predicted on the very day his wife Shirley was due. And sure enough, as more than a foot of snow was falling on the northeast, Shirley went into labor. The contractions went from 10 minutes apart to, "Oh, she's delivering right now," Banani said. She couldn't walk. She was going into labor with every step. As the neighbors looked on, Fabian started pulling his wife through the snow on his sled, but things began moving faster than he anticipated. Fabian delivered his daughter right there on the sled, scooping her into his arms as his wife braved the morning sub-zero temperatures. He took her to a neighbor's house, and paramedics were called. "It was like something you'd see in a movie," the neighbor said. "At first, I thought they were having fun. It's probably the strangest thing that ever happened here." At last report, the entire family, by the way, is doing fine. I wonder if the daughter will have any interest in the luge at the Olympics when she grows up. Anyway, moving right along, Lieutenant Chris Carney, the public information officer for the Bend, Oregon Police Department, has been investigated several times for allegedly making sexual advances on women or having sex with them while on duty. The investigations were closed or allegations dropped until the most recent one found that the allegations are true, the department says. The sexual activity occurred while Chris Carney was both on and off duty, in uniform, in professional attire, and in street or working clothing within the Bend Police Department in the restroom, in his office, and in a storage area, the formal report says. So basically we're talking anytime, anyplace, anywhere. Other liaisons occurred in the East substation and on secluded public streets and in his marked police vehicle. The women included three city employees and an unnamed member of the news media who calls him a lot for stories. Also, the report notes, he has talked to her, that being the reporter, about him running for political office. The city employees involved were not disciplined, but Carney, a 21-year department veteran, resigned before he could be fired. Well, now he's certainly ready and available for politics. Yep. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, the recent coal snap that gripped North America turned into an emergency for two men who crashed their car into a ditch on a rural road near Pincher Creek, Alberta. The unnamed duo didn't see any nearby farmhouses, so they did what they had to in order to keep warm as temperatures dropped to minus 15 degrees Celsius overnight. They tore the seats out of the car, put them in the middle of the road, and set them on fire. They kept the fire going by adding all of their personal belongings, but the fire eventually burned out and no one had responded to help, so they set fire to the car too. When the sun came up, they spotted a nearby house and walked to it. In the morning light, someone spotted the smoke plume from the Honda and called the fire department. Firefighters checked at the nearby house and found the two men, both of whom needed medical attention for both burns and frostbite. RCMP Corporal Jeffrey Feist suggested that if they need help in the future, they might try using their cell phones to call for help, since each man had one. Yee. Their main reason, by the way, for buying cell phones in the first place? In case of emergency. Okay, guys, when you reach the point where you have to strip your car down and burn it for both warmth and hope of rescue, I think that would constitute an emergency. You figure? Wow. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? How safe is the information about you online? Info like medical records or credit card info or personal correspondence? That's the question we put to Janine Darling. She's a business consultant and internet privacy expert. She's also the CEO of Stash. And Janine joins us now from Connecticut via Skype to Skype communications. Hi, Janine.
Hi, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Glad to be here.
We often hear people talking about internet safety and what they should or shouldn't do online. Are most of the problems that we hear about or encounter when it comes to internet safety some of the things that we do incorrectly, like not strong enough passwords, stuff like that?
You know, Peter, that is actually the main reason why we are at risk. Because as you know, and as everybody else knows, the things that have been going on in the last couple of years, all the hacks and all the intrusions and, you know, some of the latest drama in the retail world at Target and other stores, people are really aware now that these things are happening. But the thing is that when you're communicating with all of the lovely technological advances we have now, whether it be online, on some of your social media pages, via your smartphone, if you do not know how to set up your connections so that you are protected, we are personally, each one of us, the weakest link.
So what at the very core is something people should know to either do or not do?
One of the most important things that I tell people to do is to pay attention to who you're doing business with, whether that is in a social media setting or establishments that you buy from online or even in the brick and mortar world. Understand what their privacy policies are. Understand what kind of security they're using, and understand if they are hacked and your information is compromised, what they're going to do about it. Those are things that are so, so important now because, you know, not every company is paying attention to protecting your information. So you are, each one of us is, our first line of defense.
One of the, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, but the one of the problems is putting that practice, that theory rather, into practice. Because what you're basically saying is everyone has to read the fine print. And a lot of people don't read the fine print.
Well, you know, I mean, it's a wonderful world right now. We're all connected and there's more good about that than anything else. But while we're all connected, it has raised the specter of us all being more compromised. So I guess it's a personal preference. If you're concerned about your privacy and security, if you're concerned about the kind of information that is out there about you, if you're concerned about the kind of information that may be out there about your children, your family, people that you care about, you'll take a little time and you'll begin to understand the companies and individuals that you're doing business with.
Okay, in the introduction, I mentioned that you're also the CEO of Stash, which is a personal information and storage protection service. And one of the things that a lot of people are concerned about these days, they hear about things like the cloud, and they wonder, are entities like yours safe? To a lot, it's still the unknown.
You know, the cloud storage environment, I can honestly say maybe about 5 years ago was a bit of an unknown, except in the business-to-business environment, and consumers didn't even really know if they heard that word what it might be about. But I can tell you that in the intervening years, cloud storage has taken leaps and bounds about how their security and privacy protocols are actually executed for the consumer. For instance, on Stash, my business, we have got a proprietary system that not only protects the service is coded, it is also protected by physical means. We've got security drones that are watching what is going on all the time. So we mitigate the opportunity for hacking, but there is no site, Peter, really, that cannot be hacked. If somebody really wants to get in, they can. The thing you need to be paying attention to is when they get in, what does that company have in place to stop them in their tracks and to prevent your information from being seen?
Now, you mentioned earlier social networking. So let's talk about one of the biggest social networking companies out there, and it's one that a lot of people use, millions use, and that is Facebook. What are some of the most dangerous aspects of people being on Facebook? What should they be concerned about?
Well, do you have a Facebook account, Peter?
Oh, absolutely. More than one.
And I do, too. And I enjoy it because it's allowed me the pleasure of being in touch with people who I probably would not have stayed in touch with. And all of that's really, really good. But Facebook I can honestly say is a double-edged sword. It is not a safe environment because what happens is people begin to feel like they're sitting in their living rooms talking to their friends. And the kinds of things that they'll share that they really, really shouldn't is the kind of personal information that we're talking about now. They'll post pictures of their vacations when they're actually on vacation. And you'd be surprised how little information, little tiny pieces of the puzzle can be gleaned from the littlest bit of information so that somebody who is looking for that can rob your home while you're gone. So the point is that on Facebook, I have a rule about Facebook, and it's really the only privacy policy you need to pay attention to. If it's private, don't put it on Facebook.
And I'll go one step further. Even if it's not private, for instance, I have a large extended family, and that includes nieces and nephews. And in my case, I'm lucky I have four sisters, so that means all my nieces and nephews don't share my last name. I don't list that relationship online because they're children, and some of them are online, and I don't need that connection made for their own protection.
I absolutely agree with you, but you know, I think that we've all gotten used to a great deal of ease as we interact with each other, and I do think that people are having a really rude awakening and the bucket of cold water over the head to understand that we really need to go back to a point where we're a little bit more present when we're thinking about what we're sharing. Some of the information, I see things on Facebook that I am astounded by because you're having a conversation with a lot of people and many people that you don't know. Most of the people that I know, I'm constantly talking to about, go back and check how your security and privacy settings are set up on Facebook, because Facebook makes little tweaks all the time, and their interest is really not in our privacy. Their interest is in collecting our information and being able to provide it to the marketers that are trying to get to us. People need to be really, really clear on that. Facebook is a wonderful tool if you know how to use it properly, but if not, it can really cause a lot of heartache and a lot of trouble.
We have just a couple of minutes, and I wanted to get to the issue of online shopping. We just passed the holidays, and a lot of people did some online shopping. Is it safe?
It is not completely safe, nor is it completely compromised. And what I mean by that is this. You should take every precaution when you're shopping online, but we are a virtual world now. You should put credit card alerts on all your credit cards. I know I have alerts by email, by text, and by telephone call at varying levels if my credit card is being used. Okay, try and have less credit cards than more. Try and pay attention to your shopping habits and always be checking so that if you are hacked, you can catch it soon enough so you have an opportunity to clear it up before the credit card company starts to say to you, well, you know, you were hacked 3 weeks ago. How come you didn't notice? Because they are occasionally starting to do that now if there's been large charges on the cards.
Okay, well, let me ask you this question. Since most people do shop with credit cards or debit cards as opposed to using cash, is it safer using your credit card or as safe using your credit card online as it is in a brick and mortar store? Because you can also have a problem with identity theft even in a store you go into.
You absolutely can. And here's the truth. Identity theft is caused by humans trying to get that information from other humans. So the answer is, if there are humans involved, you need to take every precaution that you possibly can and understand, if you are hacked, what are the steps to go about to clear up that inconvenience and in some cases, you know, a real horror story. So the faster you know that this may have happened to you and the faster you address it, the easier you're going to get your identity back and the less responsibility you'll have financially.
all vital information. People can find more information by going to your website, which I believe is stashdaddy.com, correct? And they can find out about not only more information like this, but also what your business has to offer.
Exactly. Thanks, Peter.
So that is stashdaddy.com. Jeanine, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Peter.
Online security expert Jeanine Darling. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0232, and you'll find links to Jeanine's website. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Listen to this list of products and see if you can guess what they all have in common. Indoor extension cords, gasoline, wood matches, and fishing lures. Tough one, right? The answer is that versions of all these products carry a very scary-sounding warning label. It goes, "This product contains a chemical known to the state of California to cause cancer." That warning has been required on all kinds of products in California for more than 25 years, so a researcher there decided to see if cancer rates in that state are any lower than in places without that warning. His conclusion, reported in the Wall Street Journal, is that there isn't a single empirical study demonstrating any public health benefits. Let's be fair, the law must help someone, right? Well, the label on the fishing lure does warn, harmful if swallowed, so maybe some fish have benefited. But seriously, the law has created a lawsuit industry that has cost consumers plenty, and that's the real problem. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. In the interest of time, kindly hold your applause until the entire program is over.
And still to come, we'll talk to a doctor who is also a stand-up comic. We do indeed have an idiot of the day, but I have one more Stuff File news story to get to before we reach that point. The manager of a comic store in Brisbane, Australia, saw a customer he knew well put a 50-cent price tag on an $8 comic, then bring it to the register to get it at a fraudulent price. "He did it right in front of me, too," said James Jagic. And a security camera also got clear footage of the price tag switch. The unnamed thief, who is 19 years old, had applied for a job at the store twice, so Jagic not only had his name, but also his contact details. "When he came to the counter, I said to him, 'No, you're not buying that. I saw what you did.' He then made the man leave the store and not come back for the rest of the day." End of story, right? Nope. "His dad called to yell at me for yelling at his son for shoplifting," he said. "He had the audacity to tell me that he was going to come into the store to talk about my behavior. It's the third or fourth time someone has tried to steal from his store after applying for a job there," Jagic says. As for the latest guy, who he has called an idiot, by the way, Jagic doesn't plan to press charges. Okay, I was going to make him the idiot of the day, but I didn't, even though he's basically an idiot on two counts. One, for trying to steal from the store that he had applied to work at, and two, for going home to tell Daddy about it. But then I got to thinking that considering his father's response, perhaps stupidity was a genetic trait. So let's just call him idiot adjacent. We'll get to the real idiot of the day a little later at the end of the program, but right now let's get to our last guest, shall we? Last week, we introduced you to Dr. Robert Slay, an emergency medicine specialist who is also a stand-up comic. At the time, we talked about his diet book, which is called The Battle Buddy Diet, 2 Docs, 4 Weeks, Victory. But this time around, I wanted to share his funny bone with us to talk about the humorous side of being a doctor. So once again, Robert joins us on the line from California. Hi, Robert.
Hello, and welcome to my world. I call the emergency room the trailway station of medicine. When you come there, and you will eventually get to the emergency room, either as a patient or coming with someone else, bring your iPad. We have wireless and internet connection, but pay attention. There's a lot of drama going on around you. The first thing that's going to happen is we're going to give you what we call the gown IQ test. So what we're going to say is, Peter, we just triage you. That's where we decide if you're sick enough to be seen or not. You know, it's kind of like a restaurant. We're deciding if you're hungry enough to be fed. We may put you back in the waiting room if you're not sick enough to be seen. But once you get taken back, the nurse is going to say to you, she's going to put you in that little cubicle with a gurney there, and she's going to take a gown and throw that down, gown down there on that gurney, and she's going to say, Peter, take off all your clothes and put this gown on with the opening to the back, and she's going to leave. I'm going to come in to see you shortly, and that's when we're going to see if you pass the test or not. 50% of the patients are going to put that gown on with the opening to the front. And if you put that gown on with the opening to the front and no clothes on, we are going to take a look at what you're trying to show us because we really can't help it. And we're also going to drop your IQ by about 20 points just from doing that. So put that gown on with the opening to the back. Now, if you're a male and you can tie up those little ties in the back, all three of them, yourself, by yourself, first thing is you're a little suspect, and the second thing is you're probably not that sick. So that's the first thing of that. One of the things that we did on the TV show, Untold Stories of ER, was the day that I was working, and we got a call from the local university, and they said they're bringing in some fraternity boys who have bright blue pee. Pardon me? Yes. They arrived, and sure enough, when we got those samples of the urine, it was fluorescent bright blue. There were six of them initially brought in by some of their friends. Shortly thereafter, from this same fraternity, we got a call from the university health officer that there were more boys in the same fraternity who had developed the same thing, and they were all coming by ambulance. We eventually got 20-some fraternity brothers in there, and they all had bright blue pee, and they all started saying things like, "I can't feel my legs. Can you feel yours, dude?" "No, I can't breathe. I can't breathe either." And so it got to be kind of a mass hysteria thing. I couldn't find much wrong with them except that they were panicked and they had bright blue urine. So I was trying to figure out what is going on here. In the meanwhile, the word got out to the local TV station, so we had the reporters show up with TV cameras. The emergency room, waiting room, emptied immediately. They thought it was a terrorist attack or something. Nobody wanted to develop the bright blue pee disease, so the waiting room emptied. And then when the TV cameras started interviewing the people leaving the ER, talking about the fraternity boys in there who were paralyzed and couldn't breathe and they had bright blue pee, then patients started checking out of the hospital. It was about that time they started leaving the hospital knowing that this disease was down in the waiting room. It was about that time that the CEO showed up and some of his cohorts. They put on masks and they came down and asked me, "What in the hell am I going to do about this situation?" I had no idea what's going on with these guys. Every test we ran on was normal except the pee was bright blue. And then I got a phone call. And I kind of thought what this might be. I looked it up and trying to figure out what causes bright blue pee. And I got a phone call, and the phone call came from the same university, and it was a bunch of girls laughing. You could hear the TV on in the background. And I said, "Well, who's this?" They said, "Are you the doctor taking care of those fraternity boys?" I said, "Yes, I am." He said, "You tell them that they're going to continue to pee bright blue, and their little pee-pees are going to turn bright blue and drop off." And they started laughing. I said, Who is this? Tell me what's going on here. Who is this?" And I finally said what I thought the diagnosis was. I said, "Is this methylene blue? Tell me if this is methylene blue. It's the chemical that we used to give for antibiotics that turns the urine blue." And the girl said, "You're a pretty smart ER doctor," and hung up the phone. So then there's a test that we can do for that to verify, and it turned out that was it. The genesis of it was the fraternity boys had raided the sorority house the week before, and they'd done nasty things like put cellophane on the toilets and put gooey stuff on the doorknobs, and they'd put hard candy in the shower heads. And the girls were upset, but they decided rather than be upset about it, they'd have a party for these guys. So they had a party that Saturday night. I got them all Sunday morning. And at that party, I now went out and asked, because there were four or five of them who did not have the bright blue pee, who had also gone to the party, "How many of you guys drank the purple punch," which was grain, alcohol, and grape juice? All the guys with the bright blue pee raised their hands, and so we knew then that's what it was. They had put it in there. So I phoned the university back, and of course they go to the sorority. There's no evidence of that. The girls all deny it. So 5 years later, true story, I'm in the doctor's lounge at the same hospital. We're talking about mass hysteria. And there's a couple of doctors in there. One of them is a female. And I said, "You know, we have the university thing." She says, "Oh, I was at the university when that happened." I said, "You were?" She says, "Yeah, I was in the sorority." "You were?" "Yeah, I was." "Well, what was your major?" "Chemistry." I said, "Come back here." She started leaving the room. "Come back here. Tell me what's going on. What is this?" And I said, "You know, you had to have something to do with this, didn't you?" She turns around, looks over her shoulder, and says, "You're a pretty smart ER doctor, aren't you?"
I have to ask, you mentioned some of the other symptoms that these guys had. Were those other symptoms based on fear, or were they psychosomatic?
Absolutely fear. Absolutely fear. I could tell you right now, Peter, and this happens in the air all the time. You know, Peter, if you don't think about taking your next breath, you're not going to be able to breathe. I can tell you that. And you'll sit there and you'll start becoming aware of your chest and whether you can't breathe. It's kind of like hyperventilation syndrome or panic disorder, but it spreads. And it's there have been numerous descriptions in the literature of mass paralysis in schools and so on, where people actually develop the symptoms. And they're real to them, and it's just spreading one to the other. There was nothing wrong with these guys. Once I told them, it's harmless, everybody go home, all of a sudden they all got up and walked out of the place perfectly fine.
So
the other thing I like to warn patients about, and you may have had some experience with this, is be careful with doctor talk. I'm going to give you a little bit of a translation here. If the doctor is working on you and he says, Peter, you're going to feel a little pressure now. What you're going to feel, especially if he's below the waist, what you're going to feel is a pain so severe that you're going to see white light, Jesus and Buddha, and you're going to say, take me now, Lord, take me now. That's the kind of pain that you're going to feel. So when they say a little pressure, get ready. I always tell them you're going to feel a little pain, not a little pressure. The other one that gets me is you go to the surgeon and you're going to have, let's say, an orthopedic procedure like a knee operation or something. And you say, doctor, is there a lot of pain and suffering associated with this operation? You know, Peter, in my experience, there's very little, if any, pain at all. And people return to work very quickly. There's absolutely very little, if any, pain or suffering. Really? Well, what is your experience? Well, I've had a lot of patients that I've done this on. Well, have you ever had the operation yourself, doctor? Well, not really. So there's that answer. So be careful when they're telling you that particular story. Have you got time for one more?
One more, yes.
This is my favorite one. This happened actually about 4 weeks ago. So I'm coming in the ambulance entrance, starting to come to work. I'm in my scrub suit, and I open the ambulance doors, the big sliding doors that they bring the gurneys in. And as I open the doors, there's a man running from the back room naked toward me. And this man is coming at a high rate of speed, and the nurses, he's gotten out of what we call the observation room where we put drug overdoses in psychiatric cases. The man's come out of that room naked, and he's running toward me, and I notice that he has a Foley catheter in, and it's flapping in the breeze as he's running toward me. The nurses all scream, stop him, Dr. Slade, stop him. Now, I used to play free safety in college, and I believe I can bring a man down in the open field as well as anybody can that's played college football. So I'm ready to stop him. I'm on my toes. I'm squaring up my shoulders. As you remember, the coach always told you, when you tackle a guy running past you, you must put your head in front or you'll do an arm tackle and he'll run through. And the other thing you must do is you must focus on his belly button, because he can shake and jive, but he cannot move that belly button. So I'm focusing on his belly button. I'm on the toes of my feet. I've got my shoulders squared. I'm going to drive into this guy with my head in front of him at the belly button level. I'm going to pull his knees up and drive him to the ground. He is not going to get out of this ER. He's coming toward the ambulance entrance exit, getting ready to leave. I get on my toes. I get ready to go. I stand up and I watch him go. He could go all the way. There he goes. I'm not tackling a naked man with a Foley flapping in the breeze. So that is a true story. That man actually ended up running all over and making the news. Thank God he didn't get hurt or do anything. That was the only reason I would have considered tackling him. But once I saw that Foley in that belly button, I decided, you know, you got to let a few of them go, and this is one we're going to let go.
Bob, you mentioned both when we spoke to you last time and now that you have this television show. We just got about a minute. Tell us a little bit about that, Untold Stories of the ER.
It's a fabulous show. It's on Discovery and Fitness Channel. They usually show it on Saturdays. I've been in 8 of those episodes now, and I think people would really enjoy it. They're true stories of the ER. The doctor tells them, then we reenact the stories, and they're really kind of fun. So it's Untold Stories of the ER. You can go on to their website, Untold Stories of the ER, and see clips from the shows. They're a lot of fun. They're a lot of fun. There's always something new and something happening. One more plug for my book. Please take a look at BattleBuddyDiet.com if you have a chance. You can have links to the show and also see stand-up comedy and samples of the book.
Thank you very much, Bob. Nice to talk to you once again.
Thank you, Peter. You're great.
Dr. Robert Slay, who besides being a doctor is also a stand-up comic and an author. His book is The Battle Buddy Diet, 2 Docs, 4 Weeks, Victory. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0232, and you'll find links to Bob's website and also links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for The Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
According to a police report, Tevin Monroe, age 31, walked into a McDonald's in Norfolk, Virginia in December to inquire about a job and asked the manager for an application and was told that the form was available online and that he should go download it. The manager's response left Monroe dissatisfied and he lifted his shirt to show the manager the gun in his waistband. The manager quickly located the paper application for Monroe, but also discreetly summoned police who arrived and arrested Monroe while he was still filling out the form. Now why, oh why, would someone show that they were armed with a handgun when filling out a job application? Well, one reason and one reason only, he's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0232. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0232. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Experienced another edition of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Now, doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy? Like watching puppies and kittens frolicking in a field of daisies. Like the smells coming from Grandma's kitchen. Like the hallucinogenics you took in the 60s and I'm taking right now. Hello, cartoon birdies. Perhaps I've said too much. Anyway, you know what I mean. Let the glow wash over you and enjoy. Peace out.